18-14846, Deborah Laufer versus Arapan LLC. Mr. Bacon, we'll start with you.
Good morning. May it please the court, my name is Tom Bacon. I'm the counsel for plaintiff appellant. The question presented is whether or not when a disabled person reviews an online reservation service operated by a hotel that fails to provide the information required, whether or not that constitutes actionable injury and is complete, or whether or not a court can impose the additional requirement of intent.
Go ahead, Judge Carnes, go ahead.
Counselor, just so I know your position, this isn't an argumentative question, but just it is a hypothetical. If somebody was in Hawaii, confined to bed, but was disabled, obviously, but had access to the internet, and as a hobby, checked out all the hotels in Maine, it was literally impossible for that person to ever stay at any of them. You would say that that's still a violation and that person still has suffered a concrete injury?
Yes, under several court opinions, for example, in Sierra versus City of Hallandale, this court just a couple of months ago addressed, it was a Title II case. It was not an online reservation case. It did not involve a regulation, but it involved whether or not the disabled person could understand what was on the websites operated by the City of Hallandale, and it was not compatible. I don't think it was a screen reader software case. I think it was a hearing impaired case. But the court, this court held that even if they were a tester, that under Houston versus Merritt, they would have had actionable injury, and that it stated that the person suffers stigmatic injury because discrimination by itself, I'm paraphrasing, by perpetuating archaic and stereotypic notions or by stigmatizing members of the disfavored group as innately inferior can cause serious non-economic injuries to those persons who are personally denied equal treatment solely because of their membership in a disfavored group. The question being whether or not the person is a member of the disfavored group and whether or not they personally encountered the websites. Courts have brought up a similar but dissimilar analysis by saying what happens if you have a person in Hawaii who finds out that a school in Maine segregates. That's not a website case. That is not a case where they are, the school is advertising and marketing and reaching out nationally to persons in distant states or in distant places to distant travelers. That is where the person would only encounter discrimination when they actually went to that facility and encountered segregation.
That argument falls by the wayside if the school is advertising for students, say if it's a boarding school, and is advertising for students to come from all over the United States. But to use your hypothetical, the school is blatant about its discriminatory practices and says, you know, anyone who is not white need not apply. Under your theory, you'd have standing there too, right? Assuming there was a federal statute similar to the ADA provision at issue here.
There was a case called Camacho versus Vanderbilt University, which describes exactly that scenario where Vanderbilt University reached out to and marketed to persons in other states. It involved a little bit of a long arm jurisdiction analysis, as well as this analysis, is whether or not he suffered injury in his own place and whether or not he had to intend to go to that university. And the question was whether or not he intended to go back to the website. If I could distill the law.
Let me ask you one more thing, and then I'll stop with you and let Judge Newsom and Judge Carnes ask you anything that they would like. Given the state of very confused, I think, Supreme Court case law. I'm sympathetic to your argument on standing because of Havens, Public Citizen, and Aikens. I think it's really hard to get away from those cases, and they seem to create a sliver of cases, a sliver of scenarios where testers get Article III standing, even though they don't intend to use the facility in question. Having said all of that, as a general matter, why is an injury to a person who just merely views a website with no intention of accessing that website services concrete in an Article III sense?
Because that's exactly what Havens Realty stands for.
I know. I've already told you, Mr. Bacon, I've already told you I'm sympathetic to your argument. But I want you to tell me, and Havens is one of those cases that I think strengthens your argument. But now I want to know from a theoretical sort of first principles level, why you think that a person who views a website without ever intending to use the website services or products or facilities suffers injury if that website doesn't comply with the law.
The question is, what is the nature of the injury? The nature of the injury is discrimination. The statute, and we lay it out in the brief, the statute has a framework which connects all the dots that creates that establishes the definition of discrimination under the ADA. The plaintiff in that case has been deprived of full and equal access to a service, privilege, or advantage under Section 12182. In the Congressional Purposes section, additional injuries were listed as failure to fully participate in all aspects of society, isolation, segregation, inferior status, which was referenced in the Sierra case, the denial of equality of opportunity, and that discrimination includes areas of communication. It becomes a matter of...
But it can't be... Right. Again, I'm putting aside the cases that I think support your position. I'm just trying to figure out how to understand this from a theoretical perspective. If you have an entity, call it a school, call it a brick and mortar store, call it an online retailer, whatever you want, that discriminates overtly, blatantly, on a website, does that mean that every person who accesses the website has standing to sue under the Equal Protection Clause, even if that person never intends to avail himself or herself of the services of the entity or the website?
Under Sierra, provided that they're a member of the protected class. In other words...
Okay. Well, then that means that every person who is subject to, who could potentially be discriminated against by the entity with the discriminatory website can sue. So every person becomes a mini attorney general, an individual attorney general suing. So if I view a website in Alaska, and that website, I'm going to use the example because of my ethnic group. If that website for that entity discriminates against Hispanics, I can sue. I've got injury in fact, even though I never intend to go to Alaska or to avail myself of that Alaska entity's services. Would that be your position?
Well, it's marketing and advertising to you in your home and me and my and every disabled person in their home. By its nature, a hotel does exactly that. It markets out to distant travelers, but it is saying to, essentially saying to disabled people, you can't come here.
Let me ask you this, just to sort of piggyback on Judge Jordan's question. I mean, as you know, I know Sierra well. I was on the panel, joined the opinion, wrote 60 pages thereafter, sort of expressing my consternation with current standing doctrine. But it is what it is. Can your reading of Sierra, that so long as you are subjected to discrimination within the meaning of a statute, can that survive the subsequent decision of the Supreme Court in TransUnion? Doesn't TransUnion, sort of full-throatedly say, again, much to my disappointment perhaps, but it pretty full-throatedly says, the mere fact that Congress has seen fit to put you in the class of injured people and give you a cause of action just isn't good enough.
I think Tritchell and TransUnion, I think, are relevant to this analysis. TransUnion distinguished itself because the United States, as amicus curiae, had made this sort of argument. And TransUnion said that, well, this was not a case. TransUnion was not a case where the plaintiff was deprived of their right to information.
Well, okay. So we're talking about two different aspects of TransUnion. First, I take you to be making two slightly different arguments here. I think this shows that the standing jurisprudence is a little confused, but the Supreme Court in Spokio and TransUnion has sort of carved out these like sui generis islands, informational injury and discrimination or stigmatic injury, and sort of preserve those as exceptions from its otherwise applicable history and judgment of Congress test. And you seem to be traveling under both of those. I was asking you, I think, first about the stigmatic injury piece of Sierra, where Sierra says, just like you said, this plaintiff is within the was discriminated against within the meaning of the statute. Good enough. Move on. Can that, without resorting to informational injury theory, can that holding of Sierra on stigmatic injury within the meaning of a statute survive TransUnion, which says the fact that you're within the four corners of a statute and have a cause of action is not sufficient?
TransUnion cited Tritchell, and Tritchell raised that question as to whether or not that's enough, or whether there's got to be some sort of downstream consequences, or whether Havens Realty applies. And the Tritchell court touched upon the notion that there's a difference between an anti-discrimination case such as Havens Realty versus other cases which don't involve that don't involve discrimination statutes. Spokio, TransUnion, Carello, Maransky, Tritchell, Casillas, Brentley and Griffin, those are not civil rights cases. And Tritchell seemed to make this distinction that's important. And if the Supreme Court had in TransUnion or in Spokio involving non-civil rights cases had intended to narrow the Supreme Court's prior opinion in Havens Realty, I would think it would have done so more expressly rather than leave it to lower courts to make a strained interpretation as to whether it does or it does not.
So your position with respect to Havens Realty and TransUnion is that when Havens Realty says, which I think it does, if you're within the statute, good enough, that nonetheless survives TransUnion, which says that it's not good enough if you're within the meaning of the statute and have a cause of action.
But TransUnion and Spokio also, Spokio said it expressly and TransUnion said it, indirectly, that being deprived of the right to information is fully actionable.
All right, so one more question. I've carried you beyond your time, but if we're talking now about informational injury, was your client really deprived of information? Because TransUnion was pretty clear that it was only sort of the absolute deprivation of the information within Aikens and Public Citizen that gives rise to this informational injury. Is there any allegation here that your client couldn't have gotten the information by some other means? You were deprived of it in some forms by some vehicle, but not deprived of the information in any absolute sense. You could have just called the hotel.
They could have called the hotel. They could have gone to the hotel, but they could have gone, but in which case they would have had to call all the hotels. There are a couple of cases that I cite in the brief, Jusinska, I believe, Poshman, which reject the notion that one could call the hotel. That's what the district court in this case said. So why didn't she just call the hotel? She would have to call every hotel. The regulation expressly says that if you're going to have a reservation system by any means, and that includes online reservation systems, that it has to allow for booking of rooms in the same manner as other rooms. And you know, when you have a hotel website that lists, you know, king size room, queen bedroom, double bedroom, Riverview, what have you, it doesn't list any accessible ADA rooms and leaves it a complete mystery as to whether or not the hotel is accessible to disabled persons, and leave it to the disabled person to pick up the phone and call, and they don't know who they're talking to, whether it's someplace in, you know, some remote reservation service in a foreign country where they have no idea what they're talking about, or they're talking to some clerk who may be on their first day or what have you, as to whether or not there are accessible rooms. They're supposed to have that on the online reservation service, just like everybody else. It's supposed to be the same manner, and deprivation of that is a deprivation of full and equal access to the service of the place of public accommodation. And is a
but council, the problem was the reservation says if you make a reservation by telephone, all this information has to be available. And how is that even possible? The specific information and the detailed information that your client says the website didn't include, what are the chances that someone working behind the desk any hour of the day or night is going to be able to tell you about this room by room? How is that even possible?
Well, that's the point I was trying to make, why, you know, calling up and
They don't have, let's say they don't have a website. Don't have one. Mom and pop operation. No, not mom and pop. Just don't have a website, or it's down for a month. And somebody calls and has all of these questions. The hotel has to have somebody standing by who can answer all of those questions that your client said they couldn't tell me. I couldn't tell from the website. Is that the way you interpret the regulation?
Well, we don't touch cases like that. We do strictly online reservation cases. In that circumstance, you know, instead of having a system which either discriminates or doesn't discriminate, you have everybody calling the hotel or showing up at the hotel as they're driving down the road and need a hotel to stay at that night. And then you get a factual scenario like so many cats going off in different directions, and you just have no idea, whether or not, you know, everybody, you know, I would go down the street, go into the same hotel, and it might be rat infested. You know, one doesn't know as to whether or not they're going to get.
I'm not sure, Council, what your answer is, but I'm sure it's not going to help either one of us anymore to go any further down with all those cats.
Okay.
So I don't want you to spend more time on that.
Okay. So I'm sorry. I've got one more, and I just can't help myself. But something you just said, you said we don't do those kinds of cases. We only do online reservation cases. Is that? I mean, what I'm hearing here is echoes of Judge Jordan's question to you about private attorneys general. It sounds like this is sort of an industry. Who's the we in your sentence?
Well, I don't, you know, nobody's ever come to me with a case saying that they had, you know, this is a hotel that doesn't have an online reservation case. It doesn't have an online reservation.
Well, I guess the reason I'm asking this is that, the we may be the few, relatively few plaintiffs here, Laufer included, who seem to be filing all of these cases on behalf of the sort of the disabled community generally around the country. And that, frankly, does begin to feel like private attorney general land to me. And, you know, having expressed concerns in the Sierra concurrence, which I'm sure you've read, having expressed concerns that at some point, whatever Congress's power to create causes of action, that it may, you may get into Article II land. If you're operating as a private attorney general, bringing causes of action on behalf of the community at large, seeking remedies that accrue to the public generally, why aren't we now in sort of in encroaching, infringing on the executive power?
Various courts have recognized that the ADA is a private attorney general statute, and that you know, testers have standing that originated with Havens Realty involving a different statute. In this circuit, Merid recognized that you have, I think they used a long trail of lawsuits filed by, you know, advocates, and that was a private attorney general case, by recognizing that testers have standing. It's been recognized by six other circuits. I think there's a case called Bruce versus City of Gainesville, which discussed the ADA and private attorney general. In our brief, we cited numerous cases that are all go, you know, back quite a, you know, quite a few years, that discuss when you have a, you know, this, the effect of statutes that were created for the private attorney general doctrine, I guess, if that's the phrase that you would use it, but that the ADA is, there's numerous cases that recognize that the ADA is a private attorney general statute, and the congressional purpose itself indicated that it was to create a clear, comprehensive mandate to enforce the law.
All right, Mr. Bacon, we've taken you way beyond your time, but you've saved your 3 minutes for rebuttal. Mr. Haar.
Good morning, Your Honor.
Good morning.
Do a better job with this. Sorry. Okay. Your Honor, Jason Haar, the Haar Law Firm, on behalf of Arapan LLC, we respectfully request that the court uphold the order finding a lack of standing in this case by the Honorable District Court Judge Alan C. Windsor, finding a lack of standing, finding a lack of injury in fact. So, Judge Carnes.
This is Judge Newsom. Just a quick question. Just to get us started, why isn't Mr. Bacon right that we're bound by the majority opinion in Sierra?
Because I think you've already decided this issue in Maransky v. Godiva.
Well, no, come on. Sierra's closer on point than Maransky, surely.
Maransky is not an ADA case. Nothing close to it.
But what I think it did do was it did touch upon Spokeo, and it did require more than the type of more information and more connection to the defendant than Deborah Loffer has provided in her lawsuit.
Okay, well, so I'll tell you what, let's do this. We'll talk about Maransky in a minute, but first talk to me about Sierra. Why isn't Sierra, which of course postdates Maransky, binding?
It may be.
Okay, do you have a backup argument?
Well, my backup argument, quite honestly, Your Honor, is that Judge Windsor correctly found that there was no injury in fact.
I mean, I guess what I thought you might say, far be it from me to suggest this, I joined Sierra. Does Sierra survive TransUnion?
I don't know the answer to that, Your Honor.
Okay.
Let me give you another. So, Mr. Haar, I am sympathetic to your general position and to what Judge Windsor wrote, and to what the Fifth Circuit concluded. But, and here's the big but, let's put aside Sierra for a moment. The Supreme Court has told us time and again that only it has the prerogative of overruling its cases. And notwithstanding Spokeo and TransUnion, there are three U.S. Supreme Court cases that remain standing, have not been overruled. As a matter of fact, haven't been expressly even called into question by the court. They all deal with informational injury. One of them involves a tester. And two of them don't involve discrimination at all. Those cases are Havens Realty, Public Citizen, and Aikens. All of those are informational cases. They all find standing. So tell me how, as a lower court, even if we're sympathetic to your general position, how we get around or figure out Havens, Public Citizen, and Aikens. Those cases, okay, to me are like way too much for you to overcome for us as a lower court. You may have an argument to the Supreme Court that those cases no longer make any sense given Spokio and TransUnion, but I don't think that's a judgment for us to make as a lower court.
Well, you know, I'll go back to the, in the lower court case, there was a motion for reconsideration brought before Judge Windsor. And he specifically, in his order denying the motion for reconsideration, addressed the difference with Havens, finding number one, that the information was of no use to Ms. Laufer. And
it was no use. It was no use to the tester in Havens either.
Right.
The information was important to society as a whole and to other people who might really want to rent, but the tester wasn't going to use the information in Havens Realty. The black tester had no intention of renting an apartment at that place or even trying to rent an apartment at that place. And insofar as Judge Windsor said that Havens was a discrimination case, well, this case allegedly is a discrimination case too. It's a discrimination case against under the ADA, and we're not supposed to be looking at the validity of the merits of the claim, which I think some of Judge Carnes' questions went to. We're supposed to assume that Ms. Laufer has a valid claim on the merits to figure out her standing. I just don't see how you get around those three cases. They're just, for me personally, they're just way too much for you to overcome, even if you distinguish Sierra.
Well, what I was getting at with Havens, Your Honor, is that the information that was provided to potentially black renters versus white renters was different, where in Laufer, she was treated with the same exact information as everybody else.
I know, but that goes to whether or not she was discriminated against, not to whether or not she has Article III standing. So if your argument is on the merits that because that website treats every single person who accesses it in the same way, there is no discrimination under the ADA, there is no violation of the ADA, it seems to me that's a merits question, not an Article III standing question. Because we have to assume the validity of her claim, at least at this stage of the case.
Well, it's interesting you say that because, you know, the order was dismissed following argument on summary judgment, which gave Judge Windsor the opportunity to weigh evidence
You don't weigh evidence at summary judgment. I mean, you may be saying that inartfully, so I don't want to, you know, completely knock down your argument.
And I apologize.
Right, you can consider evidence, but you can't weigh evidence, right? You've got to figure out whether there's a material issue of fact. I don't know. I don't want to interrupt you anymore because you're trying to answer my question, and I want to let you do that. So go ahead.
Well, I think that I've done my best, and I've tried to show, the reasons why Havens is distinguishable, apply here. But I think more importantly, we are doing something, and what you're at, I think when we talked about the Alaska, someone could just get online and start filing these lawsuits all over the place as mini attorney generals is exactly what you're being asked to allow to happen.
That's exactly what is
going to happen because
I don't necessarily disagree with you, but Public Citizen is a FOIA case, and a FOIA case allows almost any person to seek certain documents from the government and demand that their production. And they usually don't have to give a reason for why they want them. And it allows a person anywhere in the country to seek a document under the procedures set out in the Freedom of Information Act. And so if Public Citizen says you've got Article III standing when you're denied a document under FOIA, how is that different than this? Because that's a In terms of enforcement, that's a private attorney general statute too. You can just demand the document. You may want it for your history class. You may want it just for bedtime reading. You may want it for litigation purposes. You may want it because it's important to you. You may think that a relative has been wronged by the government and you want to find out what happened with his or her case. So it's just hard for me to think why those three cases together don't really cause a problem for you. And the Fifth Circuit, I don't think, really dealt with those cases in its opinion. I know you've tried to answer the question, so I really do appreciate the response.
Can I ask you, Your Honor, a question, Mr. Haar? One distinction, and whether it's one difference, whether it's a distinction or not, viable distinction or not, is in every single one of those cases, it was a right that Congress had determined was sufficient. And you don't have that in this case. You don't have Congress saying, we want this information publicly available, for example. We want no discrimination based on race in determining whether or not apartments are voted, that sort of thing, no steering. In this case, by contrast, the asserted right is not one that was pronounced by Congress. It was one that an administrative agency put in a regulation. And there are a number of cases in which the court, Supreme Court, says Congress is well positioned to determine matters that are relevant to standing. It's kind of surprising. I think it goes back at least to Brennan's opinion in Havens Realty. Congress is well positioned. I never understood why they are, but that's accepted.
I apologize for laughing, Judge, but that was good.
Well, I didn't intend it to be, except subconsciously perhaps, but in any event, it's true. And here we don't have a determination by Congress. We have a determination by an administrative agency in a regulation. That's one arguable difference. Seems to me like Havens Realty may be distinguishable, and I can't call the case, but there's at least one case where Chief Justice Roberts has said, look, this case is different because it involves racial discrimination. And as Frank Johnson said several decades ago, race is different. Read the history of this country. And you have discrimination, the term used in the ADA. And I'm not belittling or minimizing the importance of that, but it's not racial discrimination. Now, that may well not be enough to distinguish the cases, but that's two considerations that seem to me like put those cases in a little different light, if not enough light to make a difference. Not two cases, those cases. A question mark.
Agreed, Your Honor. Your Honor,
take it and run. Take it and run, Mr. Hart.
One of the first lessons I learned as a young litigator is when a judge says something like that, I need to keep my mouth shut and just nod yes. So that, with the court's permission, that's what I'm going to do with that question mark. you're exactly correct.
Let me just ask you another question. And this is also, frankly, in the nature of sort of what I thought you might have said. And I'm doing this sort of contrary to interest, because it's to no one's surprise who's paid attention to these cases that, as an original matter, I'm sympathetic to a fairly broad understanding of Article III standing. But I mean, one answer you might have given, and Mr. Bacon might think about this for purposes of his rebuttal, but with respect to the informational injury cases, Aikens and Public Citizen, TransUnion quoted our opinion in Tritchell as potentially limiting the scope of these informational injury cases by saying, you know, informational injuries that don't have any downstream consequences just aren't good enough. And that was originally us and Tritchell, but the Supreme Court and TransUnion seems to have embraced that. And in both Public Citizen and Aikens, you know, there were demonstrated needs for the information. And here, because the plaintiff is a tester who, you know, has very forthrightly said, I never intend to go to these hotels, she really doesn't herself have a personal need for the information. And so, you know, it, I don't know whether that's enough. I think we're all struggling with whether, you know, sort of Havens, cases like Havens and Aikens and Public Citizen, and for me, Sierra, sort of compel a certain result here. But that is at least a plausible distinction.
And I would agree.
All right. Well, you've got about a minute to wrap up if you would like, Mr. Hart.
Well, I think the court sees this for what this is. These are cases that have created a cottage industry for attorneys to go ahead and make money on attorney's fees on these cases, because as the court knows, this is an attorney's fee type of case. And, you know, one of the things we need to really consider here is did she really suffer an injury in fact? And I don't think that she did or can prove that she did based on the arguments that were made. And as, you know, we didn't really get, you know, we tiptoed a little bit into the Muransky waters, but we didn't stay there very long. But I do think that provides proper guidance. While it is distinguishable, and I'm not going to pretend like it isn't.
Well, let me just
and say, the light is yellow.
You had mentioned Muransky in the beginning, but here's what Muransky says. And again, Muransky is pre-TransUnion. But here's what Muransky says about those informational cases. A prime example, and I'm bracketing a concrete injury, is the illegal deprivation of information that a plaintiff suffers from and suffers an injury in fact when the plaintiff fails to obtain information which must be publicly disclosed pursuant to statute. So at least on the disclosure issue, and that's what Muransky says, and it's citing to Aikens and Public Citizen. So it's a hard issue, I think. Mr. Hart,
yes,
thank you.
And I would add to that, are you still there? It's a hard issue in part because this information is not information which is required to be disclosed by a statute. It's required to be disclosed by an administrative agency's regulation. Well, I don't know if that's enough to make a difference, but it is a difference, I think, particularly given the general zeitgeist in this country on the Supreme Court about administrative agency lawmaking at the present time.
And I will add to it that if the 11th Circuit were to see it the way, you know, Attorney Bacon's client sees it, it's going to create potentially, I can't predict the future, a windfall of these informational lawsuits under the ADA. And the district courts are going to be inundated with them. And
unless all of these places of accommodations comply with the regulation.
Remember too, that's what has to happen is perfect compliance with the regulation. Because if there's one little thing or two little things missing, then it hasn't complied entirely with the regulation and has created a cause of action.
Maybe it's just delaying the inevitable, Mr. Haar, because if that regulation is enforceable under the Supreme Court's jurisprudence for regulations creating causes of action, every place of public accommodation is going to face the day when somebody who really wants to go there is going to file a lawsuit. But maybe you're right about the other consequences. So we've taken you well beyond your time. I think that's going to be our modus operandi for the morning. So, Mr. Bacon, you've got your 3 minutes left for rebuttal.
Could I make just three three or four points that were raised by the court just now. The interplay between Sierra, TransUnion, and Trickle. It's sort of a rock, paper, scissors almost. Trickle noted that there was a difference between anti-discrimination cases such as Havens Realty versus cases involving other statutes that weren't civil rights cases. TransUnion being one of them, Trickle being one of them, Spokio being one of them. Sierra was a civil rights case, but it did not involve a legal requirement that the defendant provide information to the class of people of whom plaintiff was a member. It didn't involve any promulgated reg. If a court was going to look at it, such as it did in, say, Dunkin' Donuts, which may or may not be valid law anymore, or the Domino's Pizza case over in the Ninth Circuit, they tend to look at that under the auxiliary aids or services section of 12182, which has a physical nexus slash intent requirement.
Can I ask you a question? Because so I want to get back to Judge Karn's point. What about the fact that, you know, Spokio and TransUnion have made relevant to some extent the judgment of Congress? This case isn't about history at all, I take it. So we're in the arguably in the judgment of Congress prong. What about Judge Karn's point that there is no judgment of Congress here about information at all? Congress didn't say boo about information.
In the ADA, wasn't it? Well, it discussed communications in the purposes section.
So do you need the reg here? I mean, does your substantive claim rely on the reg, or are you going to go straight statute?
The ADA was enacted several years before the internet, hasn't been modified since. Under 12186, the DOJ was given promulgation authority. It promulgated this regulation, and it's under the Chevron analysis. That's to be accorded the controlling weight of law. Unless it was arbitrary and, you know, in contrary to the manifest words of the statute. That analysis hasn't been made here. There's a court in Connecticut called Ganesha, which addressed exactly that issue. I think it was Lawfer versus Ganesha. And I cited in the briefs somewhere, although not for that point. But it does discuss the fact that the courts must give deference to regulatory body interpretations of law and their regulations. They'd be given the controlling weight of law under the Chevron analysis. So in answer to the previous question, yes, that is equivalent. That is a legal requirement, whether or not it was mandated by statute or promulgated by the DOJ.
Nobody questions it has the force of law for purposes of the merits determination. But what we're talking about is in TransUnion and Spokio, and I think some other decisions of ours or other courts, we've said it matters if Congress has made a judgment. And you can't say simply because the DOJ has promulgated a regulation which has the force of law, if you have standing, Congress has made a determination about concreteness of the injury.
My recollection of all those cases the court just cited is that none of those address the issue of whether or not there's even a regulation. I don't know if Spokio or TransUnion or any of those other cases involved whether or not a regulation was to be given.
That's my point. They were making determinations about situations in which there was a judgment of Congress. And this is not. I'm just asking the question. I don't know. And I didn't realize that. And what a coincidence is that the party's name is identical in that case. This lady must have some cousins around the country or something. I am being facetious about that.
That's in the record, but in July, she actually did make that entire trip, you know, through Texas to Colorado, up to, you know, all the way to Maine and then back down. So she actually traveled through all the areas in which she sued. That was just July, 3 months
ago. Well, it's a pity she didn't stay in this hotel and go down to Mariana, but that's beside the point. Let me ask you this. This is a cut and paste industry, is it not? I mean, we got briefs from you with Patricia Kennedy's name on them. We got a supplemental letter of authority with her name in the case name. You handle these by the thousands. I'm not suggesting you're wrong to do so.
Several hundred online reservation cases. The law has been developing over the course of the past, you know, obviously there could be a case coming out tomorrow, but it will probably say the same thing on either side, either for or against the intent requirement. They all, you know, they all tend to reach either Havens Realty applies or it doesn't. And so, yes, to a large extent,
I understand, and I'm not saying there's anything wrong with it. Congress could have had that very thing in mind. I was just noticing, and the thing that caught my eye was Patricia Kennedy, and I thought, oh no, another case. I didn't even know about that.
Well, there are specific, you know, all the motions to dismiss and all the dismissals with courts, and the goalpost moves, you know, like this around from court to court to court. And, you know, sure, one has to, you know, continually amend the pleadings and draft the pleadings to try to guess what would satisfy the courts. And one thing that, you know, does or does not come out in these cases is, you know, why don't we allege specifically why the plaintiff intends to go to that particular, you know, area? Like it came up in, I forget where, but
I'm sorry, but
lost.
I don't mind you and I spending our time, but we're taking everybody else's time, and that's not an issue. I shouldn't have asked. My apologies.
Although, if I could say one thing, Your Honor raised the question. Years ago, I wrote a brief which cited an authority which said the ADA is to be considered on par with other civil rights, to be given the same sort of weight. You know, this court had raised the issue of whether or not race meant more than disability. And I did cite a case long ago. I went looking for it a couple of days ago thinking it might come up, and I couldn't find it. I couldn't find my brief. I couldn't find that authority. It's out there somewhere.
All right, we'll take a look in cyberspace to see if we can find it.
Yes.
All right, thank you both. Thank you both very, very much.
Thank you.